Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This week on Dr. Drew After Dark.
My mom had me, and I remember being at the hospital, and I was hanging out of, like, her pussy or whatever. It's almost like being, like, a kid again or whatever, like, when you, like, jack off, whatever. Nothing really come out?
Nothing come out. Ladies like it.
Welcome to Dr. Drew After Dark. Please be advised that Dr. Drew After Dark may contain sexually oriented content and be unsuitable for young children.
Welcome everyone, Dr. After Dark. You know it, number 818-253-1693 and the email site for all the great emails you guys send us at drafterdark@gmail.com. Do support the people that support us. We appreciate you doing that so we can keep doing this thing. Jamar Malachi Neighbors is my guest today. He is everywhere. I really appreciate you being here, my friend. We got a lot to talk about. The best underground film at the Cannes Film Festival, yep. Which is, how insane was that for you?
It was cool. I didn't go to France though. So
well, that's like, what I wanted to know. If you went to go pick up the Palme d'Or or whatever you got.
No.
Did they ask you?
So here's what happened. Okay. I submitted to a bunch of film festivals, and then that was one of the ones. I was like, oh, we can submit to Cannes? So it was like I submitted online. Uh-huh. Like, so I didn't actually like go over there, but I actually like won.
You won. You actually won.
And yeah. I was like, how the fuck am I getting to France? I've never been to France in my life.
And they won't bring you in as a winner or anything?
Hell no.
Oh, that sucks.
So it seems like I won like their online thing or whatever. But hey, a Cannes award is a Cannes award.
Yeah, I agree with you. And as a result of that, he's everywhere. I mean, you can see him at Comedy Central, everywhere. Yeah, I mean, just you'll see Jamar around. Yeah. But House Party's coming back.
House Party... Yeah. So they did it. Let me see. So it aired. It came out in theaters January 13, 2023. Mm. So I was in a reboot of that, and that was fun.
Was Kid in the reboot also?
Yeah.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. They did a little cameo.
Yeah. I've gotten to know him a little bit. Do you know he and Bill Maher are like very close friends?
Yeah. That's crazy.
That's where I got to know Kid, is over at Bill Maher's Club Random, hanging out. Speaking of random.
I know, right?
It's like, really, you guys? Oh, yeah. Oh, no. We hung out all the time. Back when Bill was stand-up.
Yeah.
You don't think about him that way anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And he was there with Kid. All right. So what we do here is we talk a little bit about your history and stuff and how you got in comedy, that kind of thing. And then we'll look at some videos. We'll take some voicemail. We'll just answer questions. We have calls coming in, God willing. And my first question, though, is now you're in Texas.
Yeah.
That's got to be a major change for you. Grew up in Compton.
Super change. Like, I don't know, the weather, for one.
Oh, my God. Today, as we record this, it's going to be 107.
Yeah. Like, I always thought that, like, it was, like, hot in L.A. and all that shit. But then it's like, no, this is a different kind of hot.
Yeah.
It's like you're in, like, the sun's mouth in this motherfucker, like... Yeah, so I got adjusted like really quick though, because it's like, okay, it's like 103 or whatever, and I'm like, the first time I felt 103, I don't ever feel 103. So first time I ever felt that, I was like, it was like, oh, I can't go outside. I can't go outside.
No, that's it is precisely the feeling I had. Which yesterday it was like 105 or something. I'm like, oh, it's like 20, it's like 10 degrees. It's like being in 10 degrees cold. Yeah. It's just the other end. You can't go outside. You run across the street. You run into your car. You leave it running to get it ready for half an hour. It's the exact same thing as extreme cold. You deal with it the same way.
And then so when it's 92 degrees, you're like, oh, okay, it's a nice day today. It's like, it's hot as fuck. What are you talking about?
Wear a sweater. So Compton, when did comedy hit for you? Well, most comedians can remember the moment. There's sort of a time when they're like in a classroom or fucked with a teacher or something happened.
Yeah, it was like a bunch of moments. I I think what I used to do is my cousin, I lived with a cousin, his name's Damon, and he was older, like 3 years older than me, and he was so funny. He was so funny. It wasn't like he was a bully funny. He was like an actual funny person who bullied me all the time verbally. And so it was very witty, very sharp, so he would just hurt my feelings. And so I would go to school and do to kids what he would do to me.
Shit rolls downhill.
Yeah, and I would fuck people up all day, every day. And I would go home, and then it would just happen to me, and I would just regurgitate.
Could you eventually spar with him with that? Or is he just the relationship was the kind of thing where you couldn't even do it?
No.
He's older, he's bigger.
Yeah. He was always, like, way wittier than me, like, and all that shit, and... Yeah.
So that was the training, right? That was sort of your training early. But when did it kind of go, oh, I could do this?
One time a kid in class, he was like, you should be one of those people who make people laugh. And I was like, I remember walking home because I had to walk. I was six, but I lived down the street.
That's early to have that. That is.
I was six.
And you remember it too. Yeah. That's awesome.
And my aunt used to, and we used to live down the street, and I used to walk home, and I was thinking, one day I had a crazy day at school, where I was just the funniest person in the classroom, and then I was like, damn, the same day that kid told me that, I said, is there a job that you can, like, do, like, a thing like that?
Yeah.
And I swear to God, like, it was like, whatever happened, I walked inside of the house, and my uncle was, like, laughing on the couch. I didn't know what he was laughing at, and he was watching, like, Def Comedy Jam, and he was watching, like, Martin. I saw Martin. Martin was the first stand-up comic I ever saw, and I didn't know what he was doing, but I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, so.
And you were six.
Yeah.
And when did it get a little more serious?
Man, it doesn't seem so.
This is fascinating to me. Yeah. It really is so fascinating.
So there are always like nuggets, like of like, yeah, like, yeah, like little
these moments. Yeah. Yeah. And you remember, that's the thing that's so interesting. You got it. They're in your head.
So I used to be bad at school and all this stuff, or, you know, like very like, you know, hyper and all this stuff. So you couldn't get me to sit down. So one time there was a Cinco de Mayo play or whatever, and all this stuff, whatever. And all the Hispanic kids are on stage. They took us to the auditorium or whatever. It's the first live show I ever saw in real life. They took us to the auditorium, and all these Hispanic kids were like dancing. And
you're how old now?
I'm still six.
Still six.
Yeah, they were dancing and they were doing salsa and all this stuff. And I'm over here looking like, and my thoughts was like, man, I should be up there. That should be me up there twirling that girl around like that. Like,
so that was sort of the impulse to get in front of people. It was different than comedy impulse, right? One was I should be funny in front of people. The other was I should just be on stage.
Yeah.
Did you do other, did you act? Did you do stuff on stage?
So eventually, what happened eventually? So I think I was like 10. And I had moved to my mom had put me in like this orphanage or whatever, right?
Mm-mm.
And so
you have to tell me about that. That doesn't go by with just whatever. No orphanage or whatever.
Okay. So she had put me in like this
foster care. Orphanage.
No. It was like an orphanage.
I want to hear about it.
And so you know, she had
sounds
problems.
Like a load of laughs.
You know, kind of. I mean, I always tell people every single time, I'm like, it was actually the greatest thing that ever happened to me, because for like 2 years, like, I was in this orphanage.
Yeah.
And because my mom had like problems, drugs and all that shit or whatever. Yeah. So so she was like, you gonna go away or whatever, and this, that. And I'm like, bitch, where am I going? You know. Like, what the fuck? And then So I went to this orphanage called like 5 Acres and all this
stuff. Oh, I know 5 Acres. Pasadena.
Yeah, Pasadena. Yeah. Yeah. I was in there for like two and a half years.
It's a good place. It's sort of therapeutic school a little bit.
Yep.
It's kind of like Hillsides. Maybe we swam through there a minute too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in there for like...
It's a nice place. Adam Carolla's father was a therapist there.
Was he?
Around that time.
What year?
I was
there from 95 through 97.
He was definitely there in the 90s. Definitely there in the 90s. That same was Carolla. Did you come across a therapist named Carolla there? Or are we too weird, wouldn't it?
No, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Oh, I'm going to find out. He's still alive. He's like 96.
Mr. Carolla?
Carolla. Dr. Mr. Carolla, yeah.
No,
he would have been sort of therapist type, like counselor, therapist.
You know? No, my counselor was named Sylvia.
Okay. yeah.
But yeah.
But you know what's interesting? I can't remember who the other, I think it was a comedian I was talking to, and he was talking about living in the projects in New York, I think it was. And he was like, you know, we had all my cousins, we had like 13 kids in there, and everyone's like, oh, clutching their pearls. He goes, what the fuck are you talking about? It's the funnest time of my life. These kids were great. I had a great time. Mom couldn't control us. It was fantastic.
100%. Like, and so, yeah. And so I had lived, like, but before that, I was in, like, a bunch of, like, foster homes, like, all this
that,
stuff.
That must have sucked.
Yeah. The foster homes in the hood sucked.
Yeah.
But then, like, when you got to, like, then I moved with my aunt, my mom's sister, when I was, like, five.
Through, where'd she
like,
live?
She lived in Compton. She lived in, like, East Side, like, we call them the East Side Low Bottoms, but they're, like, 40th and Hooper.
Mm-hmm.
And where are you from?
I'm from Pasadena.
Oh, you're from Pasadena. Yeah. Oh, shit.
Oh, and man. I worked in mental health in that whole area, and I had a lot of interactions with Sycamores and Five Acres. And
oh, shit. So we can really talk.
Yeah,
oh,
okay. Sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah.
And were you ever hospitalized as an adolescent? Because you would have come to our facility.
No.
No psychiatric stuff or anything.
No.
Because sometimes the behavior gets like labeled as, send him over here. You know, it's like we'd get him.
Nah, I wasn't a...
You were a troublemaker, but not troubled.
Yeah, I was hyper.
I was more like
which
seems to be a requisite for comedy, by the way. It seems like the best possible recipe is a little bit of trauma, a little bit of ADD. Yeah. We're good. We'd be funny as hell.
Yeah.
And talent. You got to have the talent, though. But usually you find that. You're the earliest I've ever spoken to, and somebody finds it so early. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, so, but you were telling me a story attached to 5 Acres.
So, so I remember being, because you asked me, like, hey, when's the last time you, stand up. So we had like share day or whatever, and I'd have a toy to share.
Mm.
So you get 2 minutes to share your toy. I didn't have a toy to share. So I was like, well, I'm just going to do comedy. Right. And then the teachers were like, you're going to do comedy? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do comedy. And they were like, all right, well, 2 minutes. <It's> like, and I was like, all right.
That's fantastic.
And I think I ripped off a joke I heard on Comic View or some shit.
Was it like edgy? Like we shouldn't have
said it was fucking. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I think I said some shit like, oh, my girlfriend told me that she was hungry and she wanted to go to IHOP at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I said, bitch, you better get up and IHOP your ass on down there yourself or something like that. I don't know whose joke that shit was. It was like the first joke I had ever told there. And the class didn't laugh.
Oh.
No, they didn't laugh because it was like you're 9. I mean, they're like, you're 10.
Come on, the teachers must have been like.
No, they were like.
Uh-oh. That sucks, frankly. They should have leaned into it a little bit. Right. You know what I mean?
They didn't give me like, shit.
It's one thing to give you shit and pull you aside and go, you might learn where to do these appropriately. but to not laugh is sort of, that's wrong, frankly. It's not the right move.
They were like, yeah, so, and I was like, and you know, when you're a kid, you don't got no concept of time. So yeah. I was like, oh man, 2 minutes. What, all right? And I did that. So I was like, bro, that was 10 seconds. What else you got?
One joke. Who ended up being your sort of idols, inspirations? You mentioned Martin.
John Leguizamo.
Oh, no kidding.
Nobody ever mentions John Leguizamo.
No, he's a pretty talented dude.
And he.
Just go watch, what's the thing where he was a transsexual female? Help me. Oh.
Tu Wong Fu,
yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
He's brilliant in that.
I watched Freak. Remember his shit, Freak?
Yeah.
So my mom had, you know, she was in a rehabilitation center or whatever, but she came and got me or whatever to go visit her, you know, out of 5 Acres or whatever, just to go visit or whatever. And so we were in like, I didn't even know it was a rehabilitation center at the time. And so I'm over here and she had HBO or whatever, you know, warm and all this shit. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And then John Leguizamo was like, there's bright lights, all this shit. Yeah. Whatever, he comes out dancing and all this shit.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, like what the fuck? And one of the first jokes he did was something like, oh, my mom had me and And I remember being at the hospital and I was hanging out of like her pussy or whatever. And then the mom will say how he was doing the walk and him, the mom, and him like hanging out the mom's pussy and shit. I was like, I want to be that kind of comic. I was like, I'm going to be like that. I was like, I want to do mom hanging out the pussy jokes.
Oh my God.
And my mom was like, turn this shit the fuck off. I'm rehabbing.
Other than Leguizamo, where did you find the other material that was similar? Because that's different than what I normally hear.
So Leguizamo, Eddie Griffin.
Oh, yeah.
He had this one special called Voodoo Child. And I watched that. I would come home and I would watch that tape like so much or whatever. Because I like act outs. I like people who like move and stuff like that. So like Living Color and... A little bit later on, I got
Living Color, the TV show.
Yep.
That was a great show.
Physical comedy and shit. I fucking love it. And then I start getting in. Oh, Dave Chappelle, too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He I think he saved us during this woke lockdown thing.
Yep.
I think he's the one that broke it so people could regain their ability to speak again.
Yep.
And I actually saw him. He was with Tom. He was in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And I was so moved. I was so I said, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so, you met Dave?
Yeah.
Super humble, super like, he was like excited to meet me and we'd met once before or something.
Well, you're like a legend.
I'm like, no, dude, you're the one. Stop it. You understand. You rescued, you saved us.
Well, you know what's so funny about Dave is that I always tell him every time I see him, I always say, you're cool. And I say, but no lie, to be honest with you, the first time I was ever introduced to you was Nutty Professor when he played Reggie Warrington.
Wow.
And I always tell him, I always be like, yo, I thought that's how you had really did stand-up comedy. And I, you know what I mean? Yeah. Again, so he was like super act-outy and shit. I said, I want to be like that.
So,
you know?
So that his version of a character is what you want to be like.
Yeah. So I was like, so when I saw that, and then when I saw him like do like his real regular stand up or whatever, I was like, I mean, this is funny too. You know, I was like, it's all right. And I go, bring back Reggie Ward to like.
Wow. To be able to sit in judgment of Dave Chappelle is pretty good. That's all I'm saying.
No, he's the shit.
he is a good guy. My era was sort of raised on Richard Pryor.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think his stuff. You know, there's things he says, you know, of his time, but it lasts like poetry.
Yeah.
It's poetry. It's like Homer or something. It just continues. It just goes.
Let me ask you something about Pryor and growing up at that time. So like when he came out doing shit like that, was that the funniest shit you guys have ever seen?
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of white kids saying his stories with the words.
A lot
of that. And of course, the African American community loved him and embraced him. And, you know, and he had bad addiction. A lot of people that had bad addiction in that period, it's well before you. So your mom had took, it was good for her because we treated this shit. We didn't treat it as some sort of like, he's weak, bad person. Mm-hmm. They were left to themselves and were judged and marginalized and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Worst thing possible for people with these conditions. How's your mom doing now?
She's phenomenal. She's been clean for like 30 years and shit.
Good for her. It's amazing. Yeah. Isn't it? They get better. And the parents in recovery can heal so much of whatever went down during your childhood. But the other thing, she must have been oriented therapeutically or something. The places she sent you were really quite good. Which did she have an advisor or was it where she was in treatment?
Oh, was she swimming like 5 acres and shit?
Yeah, you found your way to 5 acres. That's a.
I don't know how she found that place.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
But she really clearly wanted that for you, something like that.
Yeah.
You don't just go there. You have to find your way there.
Yeah. And I always tell her, like, yo, that's like, when I bring up shit like that to my mom, she. You know, it's not traumatic, but there's some sort of like guilt or like shame and all this shit because it's like, because she thinks, oh, I left my child, or is he mad at me that I did that or whatever? But I'm like, no, bitch. Like, I found myself in there.
Not only that, but you should tell her, look, if you want to make, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to make some amends, you're welcome to do that, but you don't need to.
Yeah.
Something like that would
line I always tell her that. Yeah. But, you know,
if she needs to, she should. Does she still work with a sponsor? It's been so long. She probably doesn't work with a sponsor anymore. But
I think she does.
Okay,
well, consult people. I mean, she does take some consulting from a sponsor.
Okay, well, she should, because she shouldn't still be carrying all that stuff. Whether it's too women do this to themselves.
Women do it more than
mothers. Mothers really beat the shit out of themselves if they were not good mothers at any period in their life. They beat the shit out of themselves, especially leaving a child behind. And it's so intense. That's why I know whenever they move away from a child in any fashion, drugs and alcohol, because it's just they can't do it otherwise. Their system won't let them. And then they carry that with them. And, you know, here you are, super successful comedian, and she's still feeling shitty about it. Yeah. And it was a really important part of your story.
Yeah. I don't fucking know. But.
Anyway, it was what was your drug of choice? Just, you don't mind me asking. Huh? What was your drug of choice, if you don't mind me asking?
I think it was crack.
Yeah, and crack and alcohol.
Yeah.
And so that was a period of time, too, right? She was she was also a victim of what was going on at that time.
Yeah.
And she had an illness, and she got better, got treatment, works it.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So like, you say, like, illness and shit. Like, what's the illness?
The illness is a genetic potential. Not everyone can get this thing where they lose control over their relationship with substances. So you have to have the genetics. And the genetics are a pretty wide spectrum of things, right? Usually you can kind of see alcoholism in the background somewhere, but have to have the potential. And then what happens is the brain in a deep area called the nucleus accumbens, which is the part of the brain that says, that's good, do that again. That is consistent with survival now. And especially cocaine takes over that do that again thing. And it's not even craving necessarily, because there's also craving, which is a separate thing. And there's, you know, withdrawal, which is a separate thing. But there's this part of the brain that's normally responsible for saying, get up, go to work, take care of your kids, you know, love your children, whatever. All that goes away and one motivation emerges, which is do that drug again, do that again, do that again, do that again. And they completely lose control over it. And the frontal part of the brain starts to shut down over time. So there's no possibility of control.
Oh, so it is a sickness. Oh,
it's a biological event. And in terms of sickness, you have to ask yourself, well, what is a sickness? What's a disease, right? Well, disease is any relationship between the genes and the environment that result in an abnormal biology that results in some signs and symptoms that follow a history. That's it. That's disease. And in addiction, the biological problem is in these deeper areas of the brain that are outside of consciousness. Things like hunger and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Can't control these things. They just are. And they settle down with time, but they can be reactivated really easily once you've lost control. Make sense?
So. So when this person, she's been clean.
Yeah. This person. This lady I used to live with.
I sometimes when I see her, me and my sister, like behind my mom's back, we refer to her as the portal. Like, did you call it a portal today?
That's back to your pussy jokes.
What was that? Fuck, I was going to say something.
Something about her relapsing or something, or not relapsing.
Oh, yeah. Right. So it's a real thing when, okay, she's been clean for like 30 years and all this shit. But like, it's a real thing though when people like smoke weed around her and then she smells it. Like that really fucks with her mentally.
Yeah. Because because what goes along with that do it again thing is fucked up thinking. You should do that. You could do it. No problem. What? Yeah, just a little bit. It's no big deal. You can control. You've been 30 years sober. What's the big deal? It's weed. No big deal. Everyone's doing it. What's the big deal? That's in her head. And that's that part of the brain saying, do that or die. That's literally what the motivation is. If you don't do it, you're going to die. And so that's not explicit. It's not like she has thoughts about dying. It's the motivation is that powerful. And so the brain kicks into this abnormal thinking to get her to use it. Because she knows she can't. So she's thinking, oh, no, I know I can't. I've got to call my sponsor, blah, blah, blah. But her brain is going, oh, no, you can. No problem. We got to do this. And then if she does it, then it really kind of kicks in. The thinking gets very fucked up.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. My brother got to start smoking in front of her.
Yeah. It's not fair to her.
Yeah, no.
It's disrespectful. All right, my friend, let's do this. We got a bunch of good calls in here. So we are going to get to this. You're going to like this. This is Kimberly. Let's see what Kimberly's up to. Hi, Kimberly. What's going on?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
In only 2 days, you can move your career further, faster with a Harvard DCE Professional and Executive Development Program. Advance your leadership skills, craft smarter business strategies, build your network, and move your career in the right direction. You'll earn a certificate of completion, add Harvard to your CV, and become the leader you want to be. Our intensive programs are designed to fit into your busy schedule. Attend online or on the Harvard campus. Search Harvard Professional and Executive Development to learn more.
Hi. Wish I could say I was doing better with trigeminal neuralgia, but here I am.
Okay, so trigeminal neuralgia is a neuropathic, a nerve pain in the face, essentially. It comes from the fifth cranial nerve, and it has many different sort of causes and, you know, sort of pathologies associated with it. But what is your situation? It's awful. It's one of the worst pains you can have. So.
So mine is in the V2 primarily.
Which is,
It feels like I'm getting a stun gun to the face.
Yeah.
I also get burning sensations throughout my face, and
it's awful. You didn't ever heard of it.
One of the worst things ever.
Some people will walk around with this. And does it come, is it all the time? Does it come in waves? Does it come in sort of attacks?
So it used to be a lot more often. I got diagnosed this year. So it used to be a lot more often, but I started taking carbamazepine and baclofen.
So these are a seizure medicine.
Specific triggers.
One's a seizure medicine. The other sort of a relax. They decrease the neurological activity a little bit. Mm. Okay. And so you're better, but you're not well.
Yeah. I have these, like, I have to carry straws in my purse. I can't drink anything on the left side of my mouth. I have to like drink at the back of my throat. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because the also sunshine on the left side of my face causes it.
Okay. So I'm guessing they want to do something else now. Is that what you're calling about?
Yeah. So the MVD surgery, I was told I'm a candidate for, but I'm terrified for someone to be poking around inside my brain.
Mm. It's sort of brain adjacent, but you're right. It is a neurosurgery. Have you got nodes on the nerves? Did they discover that? Do you have any like little things that they can scrape off?
So there was, they could see that it was like there was something pressing on it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's causing, there was something pressing.
Okay. So there's different things to be done, and there's different regions, you know, that you can have growths on the nerve. You can have the canals can narrow. There can be a lot of stuff. I have not had a lot of experience with this, but I've had a little. And in the cases that I have dealt with, they were a little less involved than what you're going to have to go through. But in every case I dealt with, they were delighted with having gone under the knife. They were so happy and so relieved that they did it. So if my experience is, maybe you ought to, have you tried going online and seeing if there are other people sort of sharing their stories and you can kind of get some support there?
Yeah, that was one of the first things I was advised to do is go into support groups. So I've been in support groups. I'll be honest, one of the things that scared me about the support groups is when I see people say, had my third MVD surgery, and I'm like, wait, what?
Oh boy. Yeah, it can happen. It can happen. I don't know. I understand. I'm sympathetic to you. How old are you now?
37.
So I'm sympathetic to you wanting to not do it. If you can live with this, do so. But if you have a good team that you trust, take their direction. Do what they tell you to do. What do you think?
I think you should get that handled for sure.
See?
I mean,
it sounds like a hell of a way to live.
Like discomfort.
Well, it's not just discomfort. It's torture.
Yeah.
It's kind of a torture. And maybe really put it out to the group, see what they say.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to do that. It's it's more and more difficult to live with it every day.
Yeah. So what if you have it twice or something, right? I mean, talk to the surgeons about what the probability is of having to do it a second time or a third time. And, you know, if they're using numbers like, well, you know, 80% probability, you won't have to do that. When a doctor says anything over like 60%, you're usually good. When they say 90 or 95%, they're saying, don't even think about it. Mm. Yeah, when they say 99%, that means 100%. So just see what they say. Thanks, Kimberly. Let me know how that goes when you get back from us, when you get back from the surgery. Okay, this is a little more in your line of business. I think you'll like this one. All right, Shelby.
Hey, how are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm great.
What's going on there?
So, I was just wondering, I have two little ones, and before they were born, you know, I had plenty of orgasms, but I never was able to have multiple orgasms in one setting.
Mm-hmm.
And I could only orgasm vaginally.
Mm-hmm.
After having two children, I can have like 100 orgasms in a row. Like it's unlimited. I can just keep going forever, it feels like. But only with clitoral stimulation. There's no clit play.
By clitoral stimulation, are we talking about oral sex, or are you using a device? What are we talking about?
Any of the above.
Jamar is deep in thought. I want to get his thoughts on this. You're deep, deep in thought. We're gonna have a whole orgasm primer here for you.
So she says that now she can. Before she had the children, she could have
an orgasm with intercourse, which is already kind of unusual.
Yeah. It sounds backwards because it's like, you know, the most common one that I can give a woman is a clitoral one.
Correct. That is a more common thing.
The fucking the vaginal one or whatever. It's like that's crazy. It sounds a little backwards.
It's elusive.
You didn't do the clip like what, wait, I don't get it.
Let's review first.
Everything sounds backwards.
Let's review the orgasm landscape. The orgasm math. Here we go. Mm-hmm. So you're right. Most women require some kind of direct stimulation, before or after delivery of babies. But delivery of babies can change the architecture of the area. And I've seen women go from, you know, non-orgasmic to multi-orgasmic, back and forth. I've seen it go all kinds of different directions. So the fact that she had a change, even a backward change, is not that unusual. It's not that crazy. It seems counterintuitive, right?
And
I agree, but I've seen it go all directions. So there, and then there's a percentage of people, women, maybe 20 or 30%, they can have either a clitoral orgasm or an orgasm with intercourse, but it's not always with intercourse. Were you every time with intercourse?
No.
Yeah.
It took a lot.
Right.
I could definitely get there, but it took a lot.
Intercourse. That's sort of the typical version of this. And it's one time, and there's refractoriness and all that stuff.
When it takes forever for... this is probably just a general like sex question about women.
Yes.
Like when it takes forever for them to
orgasm.
Yeah, orgasm and all that shit. Mm. Is that mental? Yeah, is that mental?
Nah.
Oh.
They're because there's a group of about 3-5% that can't have an orgasm with clitoral stimulation and have dozens or hundreds with intercourse from the moment it starts.
I thought that the clitoris was like the most sensitive.
Some women are just configured so they have multiple with intercourse right from the moment it starts. And if you try to do some sort of oral sex or something, they'll go, it's too uncomfortable. It's too sensitive, what they'll often say.
Is squirt pee?
It can be.
What's the other water? I mean, what's the other
water? The other fluid is, the women have glands around the outside of the vagina there, right? That the ones that some of them create the fluid, right? The lubrication. But there's other ones too, Bartholin, Skene's glands, that when you look at them under the microscope are almost identical to prostate. And prostate is what produces your seminal fluid. All mm-hmm. the fluid that comes out of you is from your prostate. So they have little, and some women have more of that glandular material than others, and it can actually contract and this sort of thick stuff comes out.
Mm.
If it's super thin, it's often pee. And it can be both, too.
Oh.
I'm trying to...
So if it's thin, it's pee. And if it's,
it's thick, it's not.
And if it's thick, it's not. Yeah. Got it.
Generally speaking, that's a good rule of thumb.
All right.
So back to Shelby. So your question is, why'd this happen?
Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home. Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch. The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed. And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents. Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Yeah, why it happened, if it's normal, and then also with both deliveries of my children, I also had C-sections. I didn't have vaginal deliveries.
Oh,
either,
that's so
I don't
even
know if that's like a factor at all.
Even more interesting. That's weird. But you got to remember, you do, you know, carrying the child, you do get a bunch of pelvic pressure that does change things a bit. But usually it's the delivery itself that does this. So are you on any medication? Hormones? Anything?
No, I did take Zoloft a long time ago, like 6 or 7 years ago for a while.
Yeah.
But that was before I was pregnant. And then I haven't been on birth control since before my first child. So I don't know.
Maybe the birth control before was inhibiting this a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think I've seen that for sure happen too, where people get on birth controls for abnormal periods or painful periods when they're like 14, and then they stay on it all the way until they have babies. And they, in that time, their orgasmic function, they mature, things change, and then they have babies and they come off the pill and things are all different. So I think it's a combination of those two things. But thanks, Shelby, for getting into orgasm talk for it. So I could bring Jamar into that world.
So
I want to give you some material to work with. It's not just babies walking out of some mom's vagina.
Which is the funniest kind of humor. So there's another thing that I've been thinking about. Okay, so like sometimes chicks, they take a pill and then they can't, and then they don't have periods.
Correct.
Like I know girls who are like, I haven't had a period and so, but I get one big one. Or whatever, because they're on some type of medication.
They'll
or something.
Stop it. They'll cycle it a little bit.
Yeah. Is that healthy?
Yeah, it seems to have no adverse effect. Yeah, because remember, you're taking something that kind of suppresses the growth of the uterine lining, so it's not really growing the way it normally would with a cycle.
So they're not like backed up with like blood or like some.
No,
some
I mean
shit.
A little bit, but you know things aren't sloughing the way they would at quite the same interval. But it's not really growing, so there's just it's a thin lining. It's almost like they're menopausal.
So that's not going to fuck them up. Like
no evidence of that.
How have we come up with so many cool pills and shit
for women?
Like that to like, yeah.
Nothing for men. Because
we don't need anything, really. Maybe
people
a
have been trying. People have been trying. It's just that the sperm, there's so many millions and millions of them, you have to suppress them all, or at least the vast, vast, vast majority of them. And here's, if you suppress their production the way we suppress eggs, you fuck guys up. Because now their testosterone is off, they're going to get bone disease, they're going to be depressed. And if you go at the sperm itself, like take something that affects its motility or its ability to capacitate to get in the egg, it's not reliable enough. So there we are, and they're looking. It'd be obviously the drug companies would love that. It'd be a huge deal. Are you kidding?
To just be able to like fuck without no sperm coming out and all that shit.
Like, semen is different from the sperm, right? Semen is produced by your, this I have to go through this with these guys all the time. Give me a prostate and a cross section with some seminal vesicles.
Semen is different than sperm.
Correct, completely different. Semen carries the sperm. I'll show you. Let's get a okay. Well, no, let's get the cross section up there. Get that, yeah. All right, so you see the testes there, right?
Yeah.
Okay, see the tube coming up from the testes?
A tube coming up from the testes, yep.
Okay, that drips into something called the seminal vesicles. It just drips in. Give me that one that's in the second one down on the left, that one. You see that thing at the base of the pink thing?
Which picture are we looking at?
We're looking at the upper right corner there.
Uh-huh.
You see that thing at the base of the pink thing? That kind of...
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That... That's the prostate. Give me that cross section again with the seminal vesicles in it. It's down below. No. Down below a little bit. There, that one on the left. Down. Yeah, down. That. So, whoops. That is how your prostate is built inside you. And see those things with the caverns in it?
Yeah.
That's where all the fluid collects. And you see that tube that's kind of heading, it says vas deferens. See that tube that's heading towards the prostate?
Yeah.
That mixes there. That's where the sperm comes in. But the fluid is made by that apple structure underneath and stored in those pink things. And when you ejaculate, it comes out of those pink things.
Oh, shit. That's crazy.
Yeah. And some of it can be produced by the prostate in sort of real time, but most of it is what comes out of those vesicles. So people that want to have larger ejaculates, if your vesicles aren't big, they're just not going to store that much. It's just the way it goes. And you can get the prostate to produce a bunch of stuff, but still, even then, so.
I never look at jacking off the same.
No?
Hell no.
So when you have a vasectomy, you tie off those tubes that are going down into the seminal vesicles.
Oh, what?
Yeah. And so the sperm just doesn't get to the semen.
So when people with vasectomies, like when they come, there's still sperm. I mean, not sperm, but there's still fluid that come out.
Yeah, normal.
But there's no sperm in it.
No sperm in it.
Oh, shit.
Because it doesn't get there.
So what does it look like?
Looks like normal semen.
What?
See, sperm is little tiny little cells swimming around in there. You can't see them.
Yeah.
The fluid and the thickness and all that stuff, that's all your prostate. Prostate creates all that stuff.
I got another question.
Yeah. Keep going, man.
Okay.
I want this to show up in your comedy, though.
Okay, sure.
All right.
Okay, so one time, I think I was like 17. And I was in my grandma's shower or whatever.
Blood?
Yeah, huh?
Had some blood?
No. Hell no. And
it's common. It's
yeah.
Okay. Grandma's shower, which is of course where everybody masturbates.
Right. So I was like dragging off or whatever and all this
whatever.
Shit.
Yeah.
And I came or whatever, and then that shit got on my leg. Mm. Right. And I got hair on my leg. So I was like, oh shit, or whatever. So I started like trying to get it off my leg. But then it started spreading and into like it started breaking up and it looked like thousands of pieces. Of,
yeah, yeah.
What the fuck is that?
Tapioca pudding. You can get these little mucus sort of plugs, mucus sort of.
That is sperm.
It's semen.
It came out.
Yeah, it's semen. You get these little sort of plugs. They can be. It can even be kind of firm. They can be kind of firm sometimes. It looks like tapioca pudding, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's clean the pipes more often. It's a nothing.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like, oh man, I'm actually seeing like live.
No, it's a nothing. It's a nothing. Like, okay. You can't, if you look under a microscope, even when you look under sort of an average microscope, you're going to see 1,000 sperm. That's how tiny they are.
And so in a little drop, like, so in a little drop like this mm-hmm. or whatever,
a million.
There's a million?
Mm-hmm.
Damn, so when you shoot on a napkin and it's all that shit or whatever, that's probably like trillions.
Hundreds of millions. Maybe tens of millions, hundreds of millions, yeah.
So what about when you turn like 70 and then you come or whatever?
Look it up. What is average number of sperm in an average ejaculate? You should be able to come up with that number.
Because when they say low sperm count, how many is that?
Yeah, I'm never really clear on that. The fertility guys. It's the number of sperm you see per field when you look under the microscope.
Mm.
That's sort of how they determine that. 100 million. There it is.
Each time men ejaculate, they release 100 million sperm. Why are so many sperm released?
Few survive.
To me, that's crazy.
Yeah. And so I'm going to blow your mind again. So I have prostate cancer.
Uh-huh.
So I had my prostate out like about 12 years ago. And that's the part that makes the fluid.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't make fluid anymore.
What? I'm sorry to hear that.
Everything else is normal.
Yeah.
Everything. Just no fluid. No mess.
So when you come, no fluid comes out?
No fluid.
Oh, you there's just nothing, like shooting blanks?
Ghost. Yeah, ghost,
so,
ghost loads.
So there's no liquid, no nothing?
No, nothing.
But you get the feeling?
The normal. Everything's normal.
Oh, so it's like being like, so it's almost like being like a kid again or whatever, like when you like jack off, whatever, nothing really come out?
Nothing come out.
Oh, shit. That's crazy.
Ladies like it.
Right. But do they though? Because I know females who be like, no, this is my favorite part. Yeah. And if nothing come out.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They have, it's a mixed bag.
How do you know if you have prostate cancer? Do you feel it?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. No, you don't. You feel nothing. Your doctor has to get a blood test. It shows up on a blood test. If you feel something, you're way in trouble. Way in trouble. Now, as a black man, you're more likely to get prostate cancer and more likely to have advanced cancer at the time of diagnosis. So when you turn 40, 50, how old are you now?
I'm 37.
Yeah. Any prostate cancer in your family anywhere?
I don't think so, but I don't know my dad's side.
If you're super motivated, I'd start getting a yearly blood test at 40. And okay. Certainly at 50. Certainly. For sure at 50. Don't ever miss it.
Okay.
Because it's a highly, highly treatable thing early, and it shouldn't hurt people.
Oh,
it's a pain in the ass, and you get it, and people don't like what you have to go through, but it's a highly manageable thing.
So when you say pain, no, that's colon, but do they go in the same way? Like,
they go in through your asshole when they need to do a biopsy.
Mm.
They go and they biopsy the prostate through that.
Mm.
And they
won't
might
you come.
Huh?
You might come because they're touching the prostate. No.
Well, you might when they go in there to feel the prostate if you're really sensitive, but they're sticking a needle in there and then exploding a little cartridge. It feels like shit.
For real? That's how they check your shit?
No. That's if they think you have something.
Oh.
Really think you have something. Like they see something on ultrasound and they're like, hey, we got to really check this out.
And they put a needle in your asshole?
It goes through the asshole into the prostate and then it releases this cartridge.
Did it numb you?
You're numbed. Yeah, you're numbed. The numbing isn't not fun either, though. So, sorry, my friend.
That's the hardest thing about being a man. Like,
they always say, the old adage is you don't want a female urogenital tract before the age of 40, and you don't want a man's after 40.
Would you say it again?
You don't want to have a female genital tract before 40,
yeah.
And you don't want a man's above 40, after 40.
Damn, that's crazy.
That's when shit starts happening. Andy, what do you think? You with me on this? You look a little dissociated. You hearing it all?
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I ain't getting those tests, but yeah, no, I hear you loud and clear.
What the fuck's matter with you, man?
That's what black people say.
I know.
We say, ain't nobody doing that shit to my ass.
Hey,
you better say pause.
So you guys got to help me because this is one of my missions right now is to try to encourage black men to get the proper screening done. And they're not doing it. Now, I have found...
Can I go now?
You're too young. Yeah, but
I'm a kid.
You can. but I'm finding that the sort of sisters, wives, maybe grandmas can get the guys in, right? They'll drag them in.
Yeah.
Is there any other way to get you guys to get the blood test? I promise I can get you in without having somebody feeling your asshole.
All right, because that's the main cause. Is like African American people are homophobic. so niggas would be like,
is it homophobia? Is that what it is?
So niggas would be like, man.
I don't know if some dude put his finger in my ass.
Can I get a female doctor or something, man?
You can. We can do that.
Wait, this bitch is like a man. Like, Dr. Drew, if you don't take that damn wig off.
Oh, my God. Fascinating.
Like,
so maybe.
Homophobia is the leading cause of men not getting it.
So would calling that out help? Like if I were to say, hey, don't, this is not.
This ain't gay.
Just say this ain't gay.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because if you guys think, and I'm going to lean on you about this too, because I really am worried about this, because I've seen a few guys that came in too late, and it's just like, it should not happen. It should not happen.
Okay, so when they come in too late, what is the prostate? Is it enlarged or some shit?
No, it's cancer inside it, and it gets out.
What do you mean it gets out?
It spreads. It spreads out. It spreads into all of your system.
Oh.
And when it gets out, it's going to kill you in most cases. It's going to take a while, but it will kill you. And so the treatments are pretty intense, including early on, we give you medication to shut your testosterone down. It's actually called castration therapy.
Testosterone? So it's like, I ain't going to be no man no more?
Well, you're not going to be feeling the
like
same.
Like a man?
The same.
What do you mean not like the same?
You're not going to have sex drive. You're going to be, your muscles aren't going to be the same.
Nah, man. Hell nah, man. That's gay. Fuck it. She getting this prostate sperm all over her goddamn face. Yeah, that's crazy though. I will say this, like for me, or whatever. Like, I will go and, like, when I'm 40 to
good.
Get these.
Good. I believe you. Yeah.
And I encourage every black man out there to go and fucking do it. Every man to go do it.
Yeah, every man should do it. You're absolutely right. But I feel like African-American men need, like, somebody they admire that's had cancer. Because that's the other thing. They don't talk about it when they get it.
Yeah.
They just, uh-uh. Not talking about it.
Out of sight, out of mind. Out of mind.
I talk about mine all the time because I don't give a shit. Here we go. Notice that I have some semi-painful bumps under my left nipple and armpits. I did a little research. I think it's swollen lymph nodes. That only explained the armpits, not the nipple. I've had this out once before a few years ago, but they went away after a week or two. I'm just curious if I need to be worried about cancer or something. Also, I'm a male. If that's relevant, yes, it is relevant. The lymph nodes don't go away, and there are no lymph nodes around the nipple. There aren't, but then you wouldn't feel any lymph nodes around the nipple. And that's usually, you got to distinguish between what's in the skin and what's deep up inside the armpit that is a lymph node. Usually people are feeling their skin and something in the skin, which you can sort of put between two fingers and worrying about that. So there you go. Yeah, you good? Oh, you're looking. Feel anything?
Man, this is like the best show ever. Let me check my shit now. Like, I'm good.
All right, good. All right, excellent. Can we see him speaking? Since Jamar is related to this stuff, any medical videos? Let's do a couple of those, then we'll get back to the phone lines.
Wow.
Oh, that he has atrophy there of his sort of adductor.
What looks weird?
That sort of crease in the inner aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just needs to work on it more. So he's highly developed his thighs, quads. Cool.
Let me ask you this.
There could be a neuropathy. That happens sometimes. What?
What about okay, I have tennis elbow.
Yeah.
Okay. How long does it take for that to go away?
It keeps coming back. Do you play tennis?
No, I box.
I was talking to an orthopedist just recently about this, and he said, you know, when people get tennis elbow, it's not the tennis or the boxing. It's the technique. Mm. So you have to kind of work with someone to get your technique back where it needs to be, where it's not... not causing that.
So I have fucked up technique all these years.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, boxing is a little different, right? Because it's striking.
Yeah.
And it's your left side?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're left-handed?
Yeah. Ugh. Fuck.
So have you worn like a brace around it, like something to tighten it up? Mm. You know, they have these bands you can wear to kind of keep the tendons sort of pulled together a little bit?
No.
You should do that.
Yeah. Look at this shit. This is fucking crazy. I got a fight in November.
Yeah.
God damn it. Okay. So, you see it? Well, I should show you the difference.
is there something swollen there?
So, look. So, you see the difference? So this one goes in or whatever. So, it's a good, healthy arm or whatever. This one more so is like dipped in a little bit. And like, this one doesn't go in as much.
Really? I kind of see something here. Is that tender?
Yeah, low-key. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're developing them differently, right? I mean, you use them differently. Are you also lifting weights?
I eat free weights, like free weights and shit, but I don't pump like iron.
Yeah. Do you have a trainer?
No.
You need somebody to look at this.
Really?
Like a physical therapist or a trainer or somebody to kind of help you, because it should be manageable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Man.
You're doing,
I mean, knocking
doing,
people out, though.
I know. You got it.
You got it, player.
I'm glad we had the thigh talk. But that guy could have something affecting the nerves to the motor. The muscles atrophy when the nerves aren't working right, too. So it's not necessarily just his technique of working out. He could also have a problem there. All right. What else you got? Video.
Okay. So I know that I've mentioned this before, but it needs to be brought up again so I can get a diagnosis. So as I've previously stated, when I'm near an exposed wire or like some kind of messed up electricity, I get a tingle in my arm and I get like a patch of goosebumps. Like it's weird, just like a patch. Like it's not my whole arm, just like in a specific... I bring it up again because it's getting stronger. So today I'm driving home from work. Everything's fine. I'm on a four lane road. And there's a car crash on the very far right side and on the shoulder. I am in the very far left lane. And when I pass the car accident, you can guess what happens. yeah. tingling returns.
It's interesting.
I get my
patch. Enough. It's crazy how people try to make sense of things and they see something in the environment. They go, that's it. That's what's causing it. What's causing it is in her. That is her autonomic nervous system doing what it's supposed to do. She saw a car accident. People immediately have a physical, bodily-based reaction to that. In her case, she has a sort of something related to what we call reflex sympathetic dystrophy, where this distribution of the autonomic system gets a sort of pronounced and lateralizing sort of kind of feeling. But the goosebumps, the, you know, the called pyloerection, the tingling, all that is normal. Normal. No diagnosis. Don't worry about it.
All right. You said you're good.
You're good. You're good. All right. Let's take a couple calls here. Let's talk to Noah. Hey, Noah. What's going on?
Hey, how's it going?
We're good. What's up? We're on with Jamar Neighbors.
Hello.
Hey. I was wondering, is it dangerous? I had a... Do you know the cancer Langerhans cell histiocytosis?
Yes. Nasty.
So I had that. Not too fun, especially a year after finishing with lymphoma.
How long ago was the Langerhans?
I was wondering.
How long ago was that?
About 5 years.
And how about the lymphoma? Was that as a much younger?
Yeah, that was about 7 years. I got it when I was 18, and then. Re-diagnosed when I was like 20.
All right. What's the question? It's craziness.
I was wondering if it was dangerous to get tattooed.
Are you on any medicine still?
I take, something for my thyroid.
Okay. And... Were you left with any immunological dysfunction? Do you get infections easily? Did they warn you about anything of the sort?
Not really. She just said she's treats it like asthma almost now.
Like a chronic illness. And do you see them on a regular basis?
Not anymore. I'm like in remission or cancer-free.
Aren't you supposed to go back every year?
They just cleared me
to not go back at all.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm assuming you are, you know, clear is clear. You know what I mean? You're able to go about your life. And I can't think of anything. If you have no clotting problems left over from this, if you have no inability to fight infection, I can't think of a reason that it would be a problem. It would be ideal if you could send them a little email and they'll check in with them because they deal with these. I don't deal with these cancers on a regular basis and get a little read from them. Jamar, you're thinking. I hear your wheels turning.
Yeah.
Can I just ask, what's the tattoo going to be? Is it big?
If it was going to be a lot.
Like a sleeve? like on some Undertaker type shit?
Yeah, basically.
Go hard. Hey, fuck it. Yellow, go hard.
Yeah, if you're going to do it right.
That's what I was thinking.
So, look, I would be very careful. If you're going to do a huge deal that, you know, it's going to be difficult to heal from, check in with your doctor. Check in to make sure that they haven't been concerned about it. All right, it's Carter. Carter, what's going on?
How's it going, Dr. Drew?
What's up?
So my question is, my wife is pregnant. She's a type 1 diabetic. When I go down on her, her cum is a bit sweet. So I was wondering if her titty milk is going to be sweet as well.
What kind of diabetic do you call her?
It's either type 1 or type 2. I can't remember. She has a pump, an insulin pump.
She's on insulin. So she's insulin-dependent diabetic. And did you say she's pregnant also?
Yeah, she just got pregnant.
And you're wondering when she starts to breastfeed, will that milk be sweet? Yes, her, you know, when the sugars are up in the bloodstream, it gets into other fluids as well, but it shouldn't be up. What's going on where she has a sweet vaginal discharge? Is she
on fire?
Does she, does she have...
It is fire.
I know, it sounds sus to me. Did she... No? Cap? It is... Booth boy's in there. Is she have trouble controlling her blood sugar?
Every now and then, like her A1C has been all over the place just because.
All right. Well, if it's sweeter, that
diabetic.
Yeah, it does. That should not. You got to get that under control. That is really important. She's going to get kidney disease, eye problems, heart, everything. Neuropathy is going to be a big old mess, and it's going to get worse during pregnancy if she's not careful. Yeah. So please get her sugars under control.
When you say sweet, like what, like?
Oh, yeah.
And when you say sweet, like, what is it? Like, it tastes like candy? It tastes like, what kind of?
It tastes like Gusher juice.
Oh, fire.
Like that, what?
That shit sells. Like Gushers.
What's Gushers? You know, Gushers really explode your mouth?
Yo. Oh. Yo, yeah. You winning. Hey, it don't seem like it, but you winning.
Is Gushers are fruit flavored though, right?
I don't know what flavor that shit is. Like the flavor of sweet, but.
Is there any other flavor other than just sweet?
It's just like the tastiest thing on earth.
Yeah. Get that shit. I mean, like, I hope your wife, you know, does well or whatever and lives a long time. But, you know, for right now, momentarily, you low-key winning. But I'm not the doctor. Dr. Drew said get that shit checked out.
No, it's, you know, making lemonades when you get lemon. So in this case, making sweet vaginal juice when you've got diabetes. So I'm just saying.
Is sperm sweet when you got?
You know, semen now. Remember sperm?
Excuse me. Yeah. Is semen sweet?
Men's semen can taste differently. Medication and... I've heard people complain about meth and other things because meth gets kind of concentrated in there.
Meth. Oh.
But there has been many people trying to make it taste better. Mostly you can make it taste bad. Tobacco, coffee, meth, this stuff gets in there. But making it better, you know, people say you take pineapple juice and use yogurt and fruit and all this kind of stuff. I have never seen any evidence that that's the case, even to the point that way back, although I've had people swear that it does make a difference. Maybe in some people it does. Yeah.
I've tried the pineapple juice. Like just first of all, I get canker sores.
Yeah.
So I can't do too much of it and shit. But when I've tried to do the pineapple juice or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I went to a girl or whatever. She don't really say.
No.
She don't really say nothing or whatever. She's like, it tastes like cup of noodle juice. Like it always do.
top ramen.
I have a heavy cup of noodle diet.
No. and so we went so far as about 35 or 40 years ago, we actually did a blinded test with a couple on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of those radio stunts.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't tell the difference. They couldn't tell. She
really?
Couldn't tell. Yeah, no. And finally, Adam Carolla said to me on the air the other day, long, long ago, he goes, You could eat strawberries and whipped cream all day. Your shit's going to still taste like shit and smell like shit.
Yeah.
There's only so much you can do to change what comes out of you.
But when you have enough fish or whatever, that changes your, that even changes like your pea smell, like tuna.
Things change your pea smell. Yeah. Stuff gets in there. Again, worse though, not better.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's wait, Drew.
Yeah, buddy.
Because he said that the, you know, diabetes was making.
Sweet.
Yeah, the pussy sweet. So what about. What about semen in that case, or?
That's a great question. I'm imagining that would be true, but again, you're wanting somebody to get into a pathological state. The sugars have to be to get in like that where you're tasting it. They got to get pretty high, and your normal physiology you won't get high like that, no matter how much sugar you take in.
It's so funny because I'm like, that's how dudes go check and see if they're diabetic. They be like, I'm good, nigga. This shit's still salty, nigga. I'm good.
Savory today. Savory. Jamar, our time is up. I could spend more time with you, man. It's been a pleasure.
You're very fun,
It's has been a lot of fun, and I hope you'll come back. I want to go. I'm leaving town today, unfortunately, but I want to come see your stand-up when you're in town here. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm always at the mothership. You can check out Rotten Luther King on YouTube. Yeah, man, come on out.
All right. It's a privilege, and hopefully see you here some other time outside of these studios.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. Good luck with the boxing arm. Make sure you take care of that. And get that PSA when you're 540.
Oh, I will. I definitely will. And you guys should, too.
That's right. Thrusty, we'll see you next time.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation of the Dr. Drew After Dark podcast or interaction on the DrDrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or physician medical advice or direction per se. You must always follow your medical professional's advice and direction. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Please understand, I am not playing the role of physician in this environment per se. I'm educating. I am a licensed physician with specialty boards in American Board of Internal Medicine and American Board of Addiction Medicine.